This episode is brought to you in part by the American Homebrewers Association, founded in 1979 by one Charlie Papazian, whose sage advice still resonates. Relax. Don't worry. Have a homebrew. Join Charlie and other beer enthusiasts at homebrewersassociation.org. That's homebrewersassociation.org. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, September 12th, 2019. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Chris Colby talks about hop breeding and genetics. How do hop breeders come up with all those tasty new varieties? And what the heck is a triploid anyway? If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. And if you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook as well. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. And if you'd give us the favor or do us the favor of rating us on iTunes and maybe leaving a nice comment there, they say that'll help new listeners to find us. And if you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. The Patreon supporter group is growing, and I definitely appreciate everybody who's supporting Basic Brewing efforts there. Losing that affiliate link to the certain unfeeling online retailing giant was a big blow, but a bunch of you stepped in and stepped up to keep this train on the track, and I definitely appreciate it. We also have to thank our friends and sponsors like Imperial Organic Yeast. The pseudo sati that I brewed with Imperial's Kviking blend is really tasty and fun. Everybody I've talked to who's tried Imperial Organic Yeast gets excited about it. Imperial offers the highest cell count of any liquid yeast producer, 200 billion cells. I like to say my stir plate is dusty because I stopped making starters for moderate gravity 5-gallon batches. My airlocks are generally dancing before the sun goes down. It's incredible. Imperial is the only certified manufacturer of organic yeast in the world. They've got top-notch, friendly customer service, an industry-leading QC program, and you gotta love the easy, open pouch. Casey from Imperial has let me know of something special that they're going to release this fall, which may happen before the end of the month, so keep your ears open. Check out all the awesome Imperial strains at imperialyeast.com and pick up some at your friendly local homebrew store, Imperial Organic Yeast. And we certainly appreciate the support that Casey and everybody at Imperial has given this program. Let's give a quick look into the mailbag. Frank from Philly writes, big fan of the show. Thanks, Frank. And you've almost talked me into giving up propane. two temperature/time-related questions about your Warthog 240-volt single-vessel system. Frank says, on average, how long does it take to heat up from tap to strike? And then how long does it take to heat up after sparge to boil? Well, thanks, Frank. Wait, this suspiciously sounds more like a word from our sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa, rather than just being a strict mailbag segment. But that's the way it goes. It's a legitimate question that I've gotten a couple times recently, so I thought I'd address it. As you know, I have the 240-volt, 10-gallon brew-in-a-bag system from High Gravity. And according to Dave, I haven't timed it myself, but Dave says if you have 8 gallons of water in the kettle, which is what I start out with for a 5-gallon batch, the 240-volt system will raise the heat of that 8 gallons at a rate of 4 degrees Fahrenheit per minute. And, of course, the 120-volt 5-gallon system is half that rate. But Frank has another question. He says, if I wanted to, or if one wanted to, could you remove the electrical from the unit and use propane? Well, I don't know why you'd want to do that, unless maybe you're going camping, or maybe you're taking your brew-in-a-bag system for a group brew somewhere without access to power. But Dave says you don't have to remove the electrical components. Since the brew-in-a-bag system is based on a Cajun cooker, you can just put the kettle right there on the propane burner and use it that way, in a pinch, of course. One caveat, Dave says you might want to shield the O-rings on the system. You know, make sure that you're taking care of them. But let's say you get the 120-volt system from high gravity and want to speed up the time it takes to get to strike temperature. Well, you can put the Warthog brew-in-a-bag system on the stovetop and use your burner to supplement the electric element. And then after you get up to a temperature, you can just use electricity to maintain the temp and then go on to boil. So very flexible. And, you know, I love my Warthog system. But one more thing about the folks at High Gravity. They're celebrating 15 years of being in business. This Saturday, September 14th, there'll be a party at 3 p.m. at Pippin's Tap Room there at High Gravity to celebrate. So congratulations to Desiree and Dave and everybody at HighGravityBrew.com for 15 years of being an awesome homebrew shop. HighGravityBrew.com. Okay, let's talk to Chris Colby, editor of BeerAndWineJournal.com, about hop breeding and genetics. Well, Chris Colby, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show.
You got all kinds of stuff going on now. You've written articles for two magazines recently that I know of, and you've told me maybe in secret of some book things going on. So you're a busy guy.
I am a busy guy. It's better than not being busy.
In addition to raising monarch butterflies and container gardening and cat wrangling and all that good stuff.
Cat wrangling, yeah. Yeah, I've got an article, the one we're going to talk about today, in Craft Beer and Brewing, and I've got two articles in a magazine that just premiered called Fermentation Magazine.
Oh.
And I'm going to be, I'm slated to write even more articles for them, including some on this beverage called beer.
And where might we find these magazines, these publications?
At the magazine store. I don't think.
They exist still?
Yeah. Do they? I don't know.
There are buildings with books and magazines made of paper still?
I don't know. Yeah. And newsstands everywhere, I'm guessing, or
in your finer dentist's offices and things like that, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah.
Next to Highlights. Have you got anything coming out in Highlights?
I don't. Goofus and Gallant in the brew house.
Goofus doesn't sanitize his equipment.
Yeah. Gallant always checks that the valves are closed before adding boiling hot water to a vessel.
See, there's another book idea. Yeah. So we're going to talk about the article in Craft Beer and Brewing magazine, and what do we got going on in this one?
It's a story about hop breeding. You know, the basic idea that, you know, these days new hops are debuting all over the place. And this is how do these come into being, both how and why.
And it's kind of complicated with hops because you've got your male plants, you got your female plants, you got your diploid and your triploid, and you got your rhizomes, and you got your all this kind of stuff going on, where it's kind of a different world from just normal or regular like tomato breeding or something like that, right?
Yeah, hop breeding is very interesting. I thought if you're breeding, you know, a lot of other things, like if it's flowers or garden vegetables or whatever, you start with varieties that breed true. Like if you've got a petunia, and it has a certain set of characteristics. If you take the seeds from that petunia and plant them, they'll grow up and they'll have, you know, in most cases with a bred, you know, commercially available variety, those seeds will grow up to have the characteristics of the parent. But also you can, you know, if you had a greenhouse, you could probably do two generations of uh, two generations of that plant in a year, and you know, you could breed away and have a new variety, you know, in a fairly short time, potentially. And the weird thing about hops, though, is that if you would take the seeds, you know, from a Cascade plant, let's say a Cascade plant is fertilized by a male plant, and there are, weirdly enough, there's no male Cascade plants on the planet. there's male plants that are, you know, somewhere there's one with that's half Cascade, you know, from whatever made the hybrid, but and maybe more some other places, I don't know. But you know, there's no male Cascade plant. But if you planted the seeds, you know, from a Cascade plant that had been fertilized and made seeds, they wouldn't be Cascade hops. They would, you know, they might be similar in some ways, or they might be very different, because they don't, hops don't breed true. They're like most plants, you know, like the petunias or green beans or whatever, you know, they've been bred generation over generation to, you know, before they've been released commercially to, you know, to breed true, that so that you can, you know, if you buy green beans and you harvest the beans for their seeds and you plant them, it's the same kind of green beans. But with hops, if you fertilize them, plant all the seeds, they're very heterozygous in the genetics lingo. They've, you know, for every gene they're diploid, so they've got two copies of every gene, and in a lot of cases the two genes are not are the two different copies of the same gene, which would be alleles, are different. So they don't breed true. And also, you, in order to evaluate a hop from a cross, let's say you get a male plant, you cross it to Cascade or any female, and you get all the seeds and you grow them up. If you're wondering, are any of these good at brewing? You're not going to know for 3 years. You know, the first year, they're probably going to have, you know, no cones whatsoever. Second year, maybe a few, but it's really the third year that they're going to yield enough. And then, if you're going to attempt to grow these commercially, the hop has to work with the mechanical harvesters. It has to work with the machinery that separates the cones from the, you know, the vines. And, you know, so you need to grow out a test plot that's at least big enough to fill the oast once. The oast is the little oven, or not little oven, it's usually the size of a fairly large building. But it's essentially an oven that dries the hops. And so you need to grow enough that it can go, you know, it can harvest the cone separated from the rest of the plant material. And dried, you know, you need one load of that, you know, so the hops can then be evaluated. So, and that's several years. That's many, many years, because it's, you know, after the third year, you've probably got enough cones that you can start to, you can go do the chemistry and maybe even, you know, a test brew or whatever. But, you know, early on, the hops are evaluated for largely their agronomic properties. You know, do they grow? Are they drought resistant? Are they resistant to, you know, mildews and that sort of stuff? So it's really interesting, because it's so, in a lot of ways, so different from, you know, quote unquote ordinary plant breeding.
And once you get a hop that you think that will work, you know, in the agricultural and cultivating sense, you've got to market it to brewers. And if you go to all that work and the brewers don't like the characteristics of those hops, you know, then all that work in breeding is wasted. So I'm assuming they do like little small batches, you know, with these hops as they're you know, kind of fostering them along to see if there's any interest before they go real big on these things.
Yeah, you wouldn't go all in the hop without some idea of it having, you know, useful brewing properties. But early on, a lot of the evaluation is for how does it grow, what's it resistant to, what's the yield, and especially alpha levels, So, you know, the chemical analysis plays a big role along with, you know, what the farmers say. And then, you know, on top of that, like you say, nobody's, you know, if it's a hop variety that smells like rotting fish, you know, doesn't matter if it grows great and the machine, you know, it's easy to machine harvest, you know, no one's gonna buy that hop.
That's a callback to your article in the other magazine about the rotting fish.
Yeah.
The fermenting fish, but that's another podcast.
So I somehow can't get that out of my mind.
I can't seem to forget you. Your rotting fish stays on my mind. So we do this little thing we call the hop sampler, Steve and I, and we read these descriptions of the hops, and they say they're a cross between this. You know, variety and that variety, or, you know, variety A and variety B, but you say there's no male cascade,
right?
Or there's no male whatever variety that's out there. So how can they cross those two hop strains if there's no male?
For a lot of the older, you know, the noble hops and stuff, the Landrace hops, there are, you know, males and females out there. But for the newer ones, they were created by hybridization, taking a brewing strain, taking a female, and then mating it with another male. And a lot of times, I think also if you look at the descriptions, they won't say necessarily a male, you know, Galena. They'll say a male with Galena in its heritage or something. You know, I'd have to look at the exact cross to know which is which. But there are, you know, in the old Landrace hops, there are, if I remember correctly, there are males.
And those are on the hop production fields, those are verboten. Those are kept far away from the from all the rest of the females, right? All the rest of the girls.
Yeah, they don't grow bale hops anywhere near production growth of hops, because they if the female plants are fertilized by male pollen, the cones have seeds, which is it takes away from the brewing quality of the hops.
So if you've got a female cascade and you've got some rogue, wild Landrace male hop, you know, within the neighborhood, and some pollen gets on the onto the cones of the cascade, it doesn't change that hop cone. It's still a cascade cone, right? It doesn't change it into the hybrid on that first generation.
Yeah, the pollen would, if it affects the female plant, the pollen would go to the flower of the female plant, and then it would grow a cone. And, you know, that's a good question. I think it would still be the cone of the female, but it would have seeds, so it would be less useful in brewing.
But it would be the seeds that would have the characteristics of the hybrid between the cascade female and that rogue male in the neighborhood, right? I mean, if you planted those seeds, then you would have the hybridization afterwards.
Yes.
If I'm remembering my high school advanced biology, I made it all the way to advanced biology in high school. I know everything about this stuff. But I dissected stuff. But what I don't understand, you know, is you have the diploid and then you have the triploid. What's the, you know, we read that in the descriptions of these hops. What do those two terms mean, and how do they work?
Hops are ordinarily diploid, meaning that they have two copies of every gene. They have one they inherit from their mother and one they inherit from their father. There are certain strains that are triploid, that due to hybridization, and it's sometimes this is induced, I think, in various different ways. But you can trick a plant into either the female donating both sets of her chromosomes and then adding the male to get a third triploid, and or the converse. And also given that the hops aren't propagated by breeding, like normally triploids, although in plants are tricky, they sometimes triploids can breed, but normally, normally is not the right word there. In a lot of cases, if you bred a triploid from, a diploid species, it wouldn't breed well. But in some cases it would, but in the case of hops, it doesn't matter since once you have the growing plant, it's propagated by cutting the rhizomes and cloning it.
It's essentially the mule of the hop of the hop world. Mules can't.
Yeah.
Mules are a cross, but they can't breed.
A little bit like that. Imagine you could cut up a mule into a bunch of little pieces, and each little piece grew into a mule.
Don't try that at home.
Yeah, that doesn't work. You get a visit from your animal control officer.
I don't think mules are probably not triploid in their genetic composition.
No, I can't remember the genetics. They're just a hybrid that doesn't produce viable.
Would that be kind of like people who have the XXY situation? Would they be triploid? I'm getting into stuff that probably doesn't matter, but just curious.
They're not overall triploid for that chromosome. They would be the sex chromosome, but like a triploid. They don't occur in humans because it would not have any viability whatsoever. But a triploid would have three complete sets of all its chromosomes.
And then Neil Peart, I think, is a YYZ chromosome.
YYZ. Ding, 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 ding. Da-na-na-na-na.
I'm triggering a lot of people out there. So when you get a rhizome, what you get if you want to grow hops at home is a rhizome or sort of a root component of the plant, and that is a cutting probably of the original cultivar, the original variety that was created or bred in the field, right? You've got a clone on your hands.
Yeah, if you especially if you're buying a type of hop rhizome from something that's been around for a while, your many quote unquote generations of propagation, it's not really a generation because it's not a new organism, but yeah, you're just buying a clone of a plant. I mean, it's interesting if you go to a commercial hop field, and they're huge, you can be standing in a line, in a row, and you can look almost to the, horizon, and there's hop plants going one way and there's hop plants going the other way. Those are all the same plant. There was a male and a female that came together. There was a seed that grew up, and if you're in a cascade plant or a cascade field, every one of those cascade plants was cloned from the original cascade plant, much like the army in Star Wars being cloned from Boba Fett.
Is that one of the prequels? I wasn't into the prequels. That's I'm a purist.
Wasn't it? It was one of the first three movies, I think.
Now you're into geekdom that even I don't know about.
There you go.
So I see posts every now and then on Twitter of somebody posts a picture on there and says, "Well, looks like I got a male hop plant." So what are the odds that somebody who bought a commercial rhizome actually got a male hop plant.
0%. Yeah, they don't. No place is going to sell you a male rhizome.
So what's going on? What? If somebody gets a picture on there and you see a hop vine, and there's no cones on it, what's up?
Well, if it's a first year plant, that's just par for the course. You grow it the first year, and if there's any cones on it at all, you're lucky. Second year, you'll probably get some cones, but it's sparse. It's not really till the third year that the plant starts yielding cones.
And also, I had a discussion with, and I'm not going to remember any names, but on a past show, I was told by a hop grower that hops like to be grown tall, and they really don't put on cones unless they are put up a trellis and they are grown tall. My compost heap hops that I'd like to talk about a lot. When I didn't have them on a trellis of any kind, I just had them as kind of a shrub because I didn't know what that guy was doing. They never produced any cone. In like 3 years, they grew there and they never produced a single cone. So I threw them in the compost heap and they grew. They're very happy there now, you know, a decade later. But even now they're growing on a chain link fence, which so there's a lot of vegetation and they're growing horizontally. But even then, there's a ton of vegetation, and there's only just a handful of cones. So I keep thinking that I'm going to do it. You know, I'm going to actually put a string up to a tree or something and let these things grow upwards and see what happens. But I think unless you let your hops grow way tall, they're not going to give you the kind of conage that you want. And so you may be tricked into thinking that you got, you know, some kind of male hop plant.
That's possible too. Also, most hop varieties, the cone density is on the trellis is highest at the top. And one of the things when I was talking to some hop breeders for this article is one of the things they breed for. You know, another one of the growing characteristics is that hops, they want to get hops all the way up and down the the vine is like 30 feet tall. And you know, they want hops coming out of all of it, not just the top 10 feet. And so that's yet another character that they try to select for.
And it's vine with a B as in boy, not vine with a V as in Victor, right? Technically,
right? Yeah, I mean it's a vine with a V, but the kind of vine it is a bine with a B. Yeah, so it's not wrong. It would be like calling a VW Beetle a car. You know, it is a car, but you can be more specific and say it's VW Bug.
If you want to be called out on Twitter, call it a vine. So in talking to these breeders, what's coming up? What's new? Did you get any inside information on what trends are out there as far as what are in the testing fields?
I didn't get any specific information like, this new variety is coming out or whatever. But, I mean, brewers should just know that there's always stuff in the pipeline. You know, the fact that something came out last year meant that, 8 or 10 years ago or 12 years ago, somebody started that ball rolling. And every year, someone starts the ball rolling now. So there's a lot of stuff in progress. I talked to them about GMOs. Mm. And like, is anyone going to go down that road? And right now, I guess they feel that consumers would reject those out of hand. So there's no real work being done on that. I didn't press them on, anything about specific strains coming out because, we'll find out in time.
So what's the difference between a genetically modified hop and a hop that has been bred, to favor different genetic characteristics?
Not much, except for the technique. I mean, in the case of a hop that's been bred the traditional way, you would take you know, say a female hop that has brewing characteristics that you like, you would take a male hop that has some sort of growing characteristic that you like, you know, for example, let's say you've got a brewing variety that's well liked, but it's vulnerable to mildew. You would find a male that has mildew resistant genes, and you would breed those two, and then you would grow up all the hops looking for ones that had good brewing potential, but also had, you know, hopefully as much of the original, you know, characteristics of the brewing hop with, but also were mildew resistant. You know, in the case of a GMO, you would just take the original hop, you would cut out the gene if you could find, you know, if it was a single gene that conferred mildew resistance, you just cut the gene out, move it into the plant, and be done with it. You know, it would save you like, well, it's weird because in normal plant brewing, what you would do is you would, you know, do the original cross, and then you would do a series of back crosses where you took the mildew resistance, you know, the mildew resistant offspring, and cross it back to the original plant over and over and over until it essentially you had the genetics, but the mildew resistance genetics in it. So the GMO just skips all those generations of brewing and just moves the gene over directly. Hmm. And in the case of hop breeding, though they don't do the back crosses. The hops are all hybrids of hybrids of hybrids of hybrids, and they're very heterozygous. And so there's, you know, and given that it would take, you know, multiple years for each back cross, they, you know, just nobody's gonna do that.
One trend that I'm interested in is hops being grown outside the traditional latitude, you know, that people generally grow hops. Like, for instance, there I saw one of the local brewers here in Northwest Arkansas post that there's a hop farm over in Oklahoma that is, you know, growing some hops. And, you know, the brewery said, look for some, you know, local hops in a beer, you know, at the end of the season or whatever. So I'm interested to see how productive these hop farms are, you know, outside of the traditional latitude that hops are comfortable growing in.
Yeah, I grew hops for several years, and I found even where I am in, you know, central southern Texas, the sort of American hops, you know, Cascade, Centennial, and all that grew pretty well. The Noble hops, not so much. They grew well, but they were the flavor was just insanely grassy from them. And I worked a couple years. I started getting the idea that, because commercial growers, they let the hops grow for a little while, then they cut them back a couple weeks after they've sprouted, and then, you know, they grow full to their full height. And they know, given the variety, they know when they're going to come they're going to be ripened. And I had worked with letting the hops grow tall and then cutting them way back and letting them resprout with the idea that instead of, because around here the hops can be finished by like July,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's the hottest time of the year, trying to force the hops to mature, you know, in at least September when the temperatures come down a little bit, or even later than that. And then we had the giant drought of 2011, which killed all my hops, and I was just, yeah, screw it.
Yeah, my Cascade hops did pretty well, and they look nice. They had a bunch of cones on them, and I thought, man, those are really good-looking hops. And then I went to a commercial hop-growing facility, you know, up in Oregon, and that was no comparison. I was just blown away. It was like Land of the Giants or something. The size of these these hop trellises and hop vines, and the, you know, it's like cones as big as your fists, my man. You know, it was just ridiculous. So yeah, it's it does make a difference.
It's interesting, and you know, it's nice that there are breweries who are trying to grow that and a local thing. But on the other hand, there's a reason why the hop growing regions, you know, cluster along the latitudes that they do. So, you know, I mean, if you had someone who was both a brewer and a good plant breeder, and they had a couple hundred years to really work on some varieties that are more heat resistant, and to work on the way that they're handled, then that'd be cool.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to count them out. I say good luck to them, and I will rejoice in their success if it happens.
Also, if you had a big enough greenhouse that you could control the light and the heat for, you could set it, you know, you could program it, hypothetically, if you had the equipment, to do the, you know, go through the growing season anywhere on Earth. I thought about this a couple years ago when I was thinking about, you know, if you had the rainfall and the temperatures and all that records from like the most famous vintages of wine, you know, you could just recreate that and then of course you need the same vines, but you could recreate that in a greenhouse and waste a lot of money.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, thanks to recent legislation in both Oklahoma and Arkansas, if people did have those kinds of facilities, they wouldn't be growing hops.
Yeah.
They'd be growing a cousin.
A closely related plant, yes.
You know, and cheers to them, too. So there you go. Well, Chris, it's been fun again, and this will be out it is out in Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine, and your article on fermentation in general is in the magazine called Fermentation. Is that right?
Yeah, it's just called Fermentation. Yeah, the Craft Beer and Brewing is the August September issue, which is their IPA focused issue. So I don't know if do people drink IPAs anymore? Is that still a thing?
That's nobody drinks those anymore. It's all pilsners now. People are wanting pilsners, but you know.
I know. But you go into a bar and they'll have seven taps and like six of them will be IPA. Oh, great.
I'll have one of those. All right.
I don't have a choice. I'll have one of those.
Well, thank goodness I like them. All righty. Well, I appreciate it. And we will be keeping tabs on your progress on all your projects.
Okie dokie.
Thank you, sir. Well, thanks again to Chris. Looking forward to reading what he's working on. He's got some projects coming up. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop, online shop, at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. It's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.